I'm Vermont Edition producer Matthew Smith, and I wanted to let you know the podcast you're about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity, so we saved you some time to get right to the good stuff. Thanks, and I hope you enjoy.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Senate President Tim Ash said this week that passing legislation that would raise Vermont's minimum wage to $15 an hour is one of his top priorities for the 2018 session. He says it's one of the most important steps that can be taken to improve the economic condition of thousands of Vermonters.
Should we have people who work full-time making only 10 bucks an hour, and do we really think they can live any kind of decent life on that money? There is no policy right now that I'm aware of that compares with the potential magnitude of benefit as an increase in the minimum wage.
Last session, Governor Phil Scott opposed this bill. What are his thoughts now about it? It's one of the questions we have for the governor today on Vermont Edition. Governor, welcome back to the program. It's great to have you here.
Oh, good afternoon.
So let's start off talking about the minimum wage. As we just heard Senate President Tim Ash saying, this is one of the most important priorities for the upcoming session. Right now, Vermont's minimum wage is $10 an hour. I believe it's set to go up to $10.50 on January 1st, if I have that information correct. What about the idea of going all the way to $15 an hour?
Yeah, I've talked about this in the past, and while I would like every Vermonter to make more money, become more prosperous, I think this is the wrong approach. I think this is an artificial inflation of wages, which will result in more costs and higher costs of living for Vermont. And there's also some ripple effects in increasing the minimum wage. One of them, you know, being competitive with our neighbors. We already are very stressed in terms of trying to compete with New Hampshire. No sales tax, no income tax. And for us to artificially raise the minimum wage when they do not puts us at a severe disadvantage along that Connecticut River Valley. As well, you know, I was part of the Senate, and we had a couple of votes on the minimum wage, and I remember one distinctly where we had this the provision to raise the minimum wage, and then we were going to tie it to the cost of living and have it increase incrementally as inflation took place. And we had a long discussion, debate about that, and I was finally convinced this was the right approach when they said, we will never have this conversation again. If we take this action today, we will never have this conversation again because it will always be tied to the cost of living. And I thought that was the right approach to take at that point in time. But again, I think we should be making more money. I think we should try and focus on economic development, bring more jobs into the state, and make the cost of living actually decrease a bit so that people had more money in their pocketbooks.
So what do you say to those folks who argue, and I think Senate President Tim Ash would be one of them, that Vermont needs to have a minimum wage that reflects a true living wage, that a rate of $10 an hour doesn't allow people to even meet their basic needs?
Because I believe that the cost of living is too high in Vermont. And the other approach I would take is something that I put forward in my first day in office with my executive order to try and three very simple principles that guide us in every decision we make on a daily basis. And that's to make Vermont more affordable, grow the economy, and protect the most vulnerable. So I'm saying let's agree on the goal to have more money in our citizens' pockets. But I believe taking the approach of making Vermont more affordable will be much more lasting, because this will also have a ratcheting effect on wages throughout the spectrum. For those who are making $15 an hour right now, I would suspect would want to make 18 or 19 if this took place. Those making 18 or 19 would want to make 21 or 22. Those making 22 would want to make 26 or 27. So this would have a dramatic effect on the cost of goods throughout Vermont.
Let's go to our callers and talk to Susan, who is calling from Newport on this subject. Hi, Susan. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thank you. I really appreciate what the governor is sharing as far as like wanting to reduce the cost of living, but I have another side to that, and that a $15 wage would be actually promoting people's ability to provide better jobs, because then you have individuals who will be able to get off of any kind of welfare-based system. $10 an hour continues the, you know, vicious cycle of the hamster wheel and being on any kind of welfare-based system. People are not able to afford the living wage. You know, we're not able to afford that cost of living, even with a rental or anything like that. So that's going to take a longer time frame in passing.
Again, I appreciate that argument or that side of the debate. But from my standpoint, I believe that it will increase the cost of living throughout. The cost of goods will go up. The cost of services will go up. Everything will go up. We will lose our competitive advantage we might have at this point in time with both anyone on our borders, but in particular New Hampshire. And it puts us out of kilter in some respects to many other states in the region in general. So I think that that would provide for fewer jobs, possibly. I think that many of the small businesses in Vermont would have to make decisions about whether they reduced hours, whether they reduced jobs, whether they just worked more hours themselves. I mean, keep in mind that 90% of the employers in Vermont have less than 20 employees. Those are small businesses, and this will have a dramatic effect on what they can provide for jobs. So I just think we have to be very careful in terms of artificially inflating the salaries and wages because it would have a detrimental effect on the overall economy.
Susan, thanks for your phone call. Another affordability issue might be property taxes, and under state law, your administration is required at this time of year to recommend changes to the statewide property tax rate that will be needed to fund education in the coming year. And yesterday, your administration sent out a letter indicating the rate will need to go up by 9 cents. That's one of the biggest increases in some time. If we went back to last year, we would see that $45 or $50 million in one-time money was put into the education fund to keep that rate increase down. In retrospect, was that a mistake because it just postponed the problem to this year?
Now, this problem was something that's been inherent over the last number of years. And let's first of all, I just want to be sure everyone understands that this letter was statutorily required that based on the current spending, inflation trajectories, and so forth, if we didn't do anything right now, this is what we'd expect to have to pay. And so this is not my recommendation. My recommendation is quite the opposite. I believe we should keep property taxes the same as last year. That's my recommendation. But let's look back at what's causing the pressure here. You know, we talked a lot about on this program during the campaign about the pressures of the property tax increases. And it's all about education spending. It's on the spending side. 20 years ago, we were educating 20,000 more children in our K-12 education system. About 106,000, I believe, at that point in time. We have schools and systems and infrastructure that were put in place to educate 106,000 children. Now, we're down much further than that. Last year, I said we were educating 86,000, but currently it appears it's under 80,000. So it's 25,000 less without changing the infrastructure. So we have schools that are built to that capacity. We have labor that's built to that capacity. Right now in Vermont, we have a 4-to-1 ratio, a staff-to-student ratio on average. It's the lowest in the nation, the lowest. 4-to-1. For every student, there's 4 staff members on average throughout Vermont. Again, if we could change that by one, you know, just one, if we could go from four to one to 5-to-1, 5 staff members per student, we'd save over $100 million. So what we need to do, it's all in labor from my perspective and also in infrastructure.
Should that be mandated from Montpelier?
I think we have to take a look at it. Again, we are the lowest in the nation. If we went to 5-1, we'd still be lowest in the nation. So we're spending $1.6 billion to educate less than 80,000 kids. So we have to have the courage to think outside the box, think about doing things differently, and providing a high-quality education at the same time, because I'm not sure we're getting the benefit of this. And we're seeing some changes with Act 46. I mean, I think that there are going to be – it's tough going. It's very difficult. But in the end, I believe that we'll have a system that is being right-sized to what we have to face here in Vermont. And I think that this is a step that we have to take. Now, again, to be clear, my recommendation is that we get through another year without raising taxes and fees, and that would include the property taxes. So we're going to have to – we're having a summit on December 18th at VTC, and we're going to discuss some of this. And I think that that's why I'd like to put this summit together, to get some feedback from the field as to how to, you know, start relieving this pressure on property taxpayers, and how do we make critical investments in early care and learning and higher education, cradle to career, spending, you know, broadening out the spectrum a bit with the $1.6 billion we're spending right now makes a lot of sense to me, just looking at a continuum of this this education system. And I think it's doable, but we're going to have to make some significant changes in order to do so.
Will you have a specific recommendation to lawmakers in January about how they can level fund education next year?
Yes, we will. And we'll be, again, taking some guidance from this summit on December 18th. We want the education stakeholders to be at the table and try to work together in order to face this head on. Because, again, we're not doing anybody justice by continuing down this path. We have to do things differently to provide better education for our kids, as well as providing some relief to Vermont taxpayers.
Let's talk to David, who's calling from Middlebury. Hey, David, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hi, Governor. Thanks for taking my question, first of all. You talked a lot about growing the economy, but I'd like to know a bit more specifically what's being done right now to build relations with Canada.
Oh, yeah. We're, you know, I focused a lot on Canada. I spoke about this a lot during the campaign, and we've actually done a lot of it this year. There's a lot of opportunity there for us. When you think about the population centers in Canada itself, Quebec and Ontario, we're within arm's reach of the fourth largest city in the country, in North America, which would be Toronto, as well as Montreal and Quebec City and Ottawa. You know, when you combine all that, that's 10 times the population of Vermont. And again, we've been benefited from some of the migration of businesses into the state. I think of Revision, for one, who started as a very small office and now has two manufacturing centers in two counties of the state in the northwest and northeast kingdom. And this has been incredibly beneficial. So I've traveled probably 6 times to Canada and trying to and made countless phone calls to businesses to try and encourage them to set up shop here in Vermont. We've had some success. There's a couple of businesses in the Northeast Kingdom that are being set up as we speak, and I think that there's some other opportunities, and we have to build that relationship. I spoke about this a lot. It's not enough to say you want a better relationship and a better working relationship with Quebec or Canada. You have to work at it, and it's something I've learned over the years, and I think that by keeping in touch with the premiers in different provinces, I think is important.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Our guest today, Governor Phil Scott. Let's talk to Sabra in Verchere. Hey, Sabra, what's on your mind today?
Hey, thank you very much for taking my call. Hello, Phil Scott, Governor Phil Scott. I am like I would say most people in the United States and in the world, feeling extremely disturbed by the president. And I know that when things were getting very tricky with George Bush, Senator Jeffords felt that he could no longer call himself a Republican and became and ran as an independent. And I just wonder if you are willing to take that moral stance at this point. That's what I'd like to know.
And let me add, we got an email from Jim who wrote us, Governor Scott, a number of years ago in a Vermont Edition interview, you indicated you were thinking about leaving the Republican Party and running as an independent because you weren't comfortable with the direction of the Republican Party. So what about the direction of the party now? What are your thoughts about the direction that President Trump is taking your party?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think most people know my feelings about our president. He is our president, and I have to respect that. But I've been, vocal and pushing back when I – and calling them as I see them. I'm fairly independent in many respects and just want what's best for Vermont. And I'm not a Republican because of President Trump. I've been a Republican probably longer than he has. I think about the days of Dean Davis and Bob Stafford and George Aiken. Those are the types of Republicans that I see, I emulate, and those are the ones I respect. I don't think, again, I guess I would ask, I don't know what happened. Jim Jeffords decided, and that was his personal choice. I respect Jim Jeffords as well. He did a lot of great things as a Republican when he was in the Senate. And I'm not sure that what effect that had based on today. I'm not sure that had either a positive or a negative effect. That was his personal decision. I'd rather be part of the solution, look for ways that we can work together. I think there needs to be more bipartisanship in Washington, whether we're talking about health care or tax reform or whatever we're talking about. I think the only way we're going to get anything that's lasting is to work together. And I think that Peter Welch has been doing a great job in trying to reach across the aisle. I worked with him as well when I was in the Senate. So I'm not sure that, we're looking at this. I think that's part of the problem. We're looking at this as a team sport. This polarization that's happening on both sides, whether you're Republican or Democrat, that is probably the biggest challenge we face right here today is the political polarization we're seeing across the nation, across the world in some respects. You're either part of this team or you're part of that team. And I believe that we have to find ways to work together. I'm a Republican because I want to see smaller government. I'm a fiscal conservative. And I'd be that way whether I was a Democrat or a Republican. But I chose to be a Republican, and I'll see this through.
Back when Senator Jeffords switched, he said he didn't leave the Republican Party. The Republican Party left him. Do you ever have that feeling that the direction that the Republican Party is going in at the national level is not the direction that you want to go?
Well, I think that there's some that I really respect in the Republican Party. I look in the New England governors, for instance, Charlie Baker, and I look at the governor of Maryland as well. And there are many, many others that I respect an incredible amount. So I don't believe, that President Trump, he has his own views, his own style, and they don't reflect mine. I'll continue to do what I think is right and to call them as I see them. And when the president doesn't do something or the Congress doesn't do something, whether it's by Republicans or Democrats, I'll push back and protect Vermont.
I wanted to talk to you about the marijuana bill. At the end of the special session in June, you supported legislation that would legalize the possession of a small amount of marijuana up to an ounce, I believe.
More of a libertarian approach. Correct.
And people could grow a couple of plants as well. Then House Republicans used some procedural rules to block consideration of that bill. So it's going to come up again in January. Would you like to see that bill pass right at the beginning of the session?
Well, again, it's not a high priority for me, but I did make a commitment that I was supportive of the bill that was put together. It wasn't everything that I wanted. But as you recall, a part of that bill was putting a commission together to take a look at things such as highway impairment and taxation and so forth. And I've done that. I put a commission together. So part of that bill is no longer needed. I'm not sure what the House is going to do. I haven't spoken to the legislative leaders about what their intent is. But I would suspect that they'd either make some changes on the floor, send it back to committee, make some alterations, and then we'll see what they either add or delete, and see if it's the same as what I'd said committed to pushing forward with.
So, could you see yourself supporting a personal possession bill, let's say in the first few weeks of the session, if that because you supported it
right
before, you still support it now?
Yeah, again, I made that commitment. It's a libertarian approach, and that was something that that I was comfortable doing.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Kyle in Burlington. Hi, Kyle. Welcome to the program.
Thanks. I just wanted to ask a question about, you know, you were talking about earlier about how raising the minimum wage could make us uncompetitive with New Hampshire. But what about if there was some, you know, we work towards more of an economic partnership within New England as a region to eliminate some of these, you know, things that make us uncompetitive and rather, you know, raise the quality of living for all people in New England and, you know, kind of put that part of it to bed and you know, start moving on with trying to bring more companies to individual states?
I think it's a great approach to work with other northeastern states. I've tried to promote that in many, many different ways. In fact, the Chamber of Commerce is working on a more of an aeronautical regional approach from Canada all the way down into Connecticut, for instance. And I think that that has great opportunities for Vermont, understanding that we can't build aircraft here in Vermont, but we can build pieces. And if we thought about this more on a regional basis with again, those suppliers in other northeastern states and work together instead of competing against each other, that makes a lot of sense to me. As well, you know, we talk about the cost of doing business. I think from a Northeast perspective, New England in particular, that we should be focusing on how do we reduce the cost of utility costs, the cost of electricity. We in New England, we in Vermont are amongst the lowest, maybe the lowest rate in New England, but that only makes us the seventh highest in the nation. So we have to become more competitive as a region, and if we can work together and do that, I'm all ears and would seek that opportunity.
Just wanted to go back to the marijuana issue for a moment because you've always been concerned about driver impairment and having some sort of test be available to tell if a driver has been impaired after using marijuana. You also talked about reaching out to governors in New England. Massachusetts, I think, is going to start selling marijuana next month, if I remember that correctly. Maine is supporting the legalization of marijuana. Have you gotten anywhere with a kind of a New England approach to impairment?
Well, we have talked about this, and we'll continue to try and work together in that respect. I think that, that was done by referendum both in Massachusetts and Maine. I think Massachusetts might be a little bit ahead of Maine at this point, and they've struggled to make sure that they're putting the regulatory system into place as we speak. But I still look forward to working with them in terms of impairment. I just want to caution all our listeners here about, you know, impairment is taking on a whole new meaning these days. It's not just impairment due to alcohol or not just to marijuana, but it's prescription drugs and heroin and a combination of all. And we have to come up with a way to determine impairment on our highways, regardless of what the substance is, and try and figure a way to determine that impairment if there's a combination of different drugs being used, and I'll include, you know, you could be under the limit of alcohol currently. You could smoke pot and be under, let's say, I think it's 10 nanograms that they came up with in Colorado, for
instance.
I think
they use five.
Okay, well, five. But if you could be under five, let's say, if you put that into place, and you could take some prescription drugs, and you could have a combination of the three, and you'd be impaired. But there's no way of determining that impairment. So I think we have to seek a resolution on this. And I'm sure there's technology that's being contemplated as we speak, because we're all facing this. And with the amount of impairment on our highways, the amount of distracted driving, the number of deaths is going up throughout our country, here in this state and throughout the country. It's something that I think has to be addressed. Regardless of what we do, whether we legalize or not, we still have to face this, and we still have to implement something to try and reduce the amount of impaired driving in Vermont.
Let's talk to John, who's calling from Bradford. Hi, John. Welcome to the program.
Okay. Well, on the marijuana thing, I went to help somebody I hadn't seen for 40 years and cut some wood 2 years ago. And out of the corner of my eye, I hadn't been around marijuana in a long time. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw him smoking pot, and I didn't think anything of it. Well, you know what that does to your motor skills? Well, I told him to wait as I picked up a 24-by-30-inch piece of maple, and he pushed the lever and took my finger off. And when Mr. Ash, and we can be quoted, says everybody's gentle, you can't do stuff like that. I think with the problems in our society with drugs, this is just giving one more thing. I wouldn't want my grandkids to do any drugs, and I model that for them. I drive truck. I can't, and I don't want them.
Okay, John, thank you very much for your phone call. How about this idea of a saliva test? That came up in the Senate a couple of years ago. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, you know, that's just another way of determining, and I don't know enough about it other than what I read. And Canada is considering this for THC levels as well. But they, from what I read, if I've got this right, they were looking at a zero tolerance for saliva. If THC is detected in saliva, you lose your license. That's it, plain and simple. But I don't know enough about. I know THC stays in your blood system for quite some time, but possibly not in saliva. I just don't know. We're moving towards that. I know public safety is interested in increasing the use of saliva tests, but it's been very expensive. And we have to determine a way to pay for that and make sure that it's effective as well.
So what would you say to the caller we just had, John, and other people who say, you know, we've got two legal drugs right now. We have alcohol and tobacco. And look what those do to society and the health problems that they cause. And they wonder, why on earth would Vermont consider legalizing yet another drug?
Yeah. You know, again, I'm not the one promoting this. I'm not the one pushing forward with this. This isn't my initiative. My initiative is about growing the economy, making Vermont more affordable, and protecting the most vulnerable. But there are some that have been pushing for this. This is on a national level. A number of states have already legalized. It's surrounding us, whether we like it or not. It's here. And it's being utilized. So we have to take steps to protect the general public on our highways in particular. But I would reach out to John as well and say, if you were cutting wood, splitting wood, and there was a guy having a beer or two while you're doing that, I would have the same fears. So I think we have to be realistic, though, that there's a great number of Vermonters that are utilizing pot on a daily basis. So how do we address the concerns that John has and I have in terms of impairment on our highways and making sure that our kids are protected? I think that's something that's not lost on me and many others, is the edibles. That's a growing problem. I think that Colorado has highlighted this as an issue, and I think that that's something that we have to address as well. So before legalizing in any regulatory market, that we need to address those issues.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Our guest today, Governor Phil Scott. Let's talk to John, who's calling from Richmond. Hey, John, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob. Hello, Governor Scott. Earlier, Governor, you were talking about level funding education. And my concern with that is I was wondering whether you had any guidance or a plan around how you would maintain or ultimately improve educational quality while controlling costs. Because as far as I'm concerned, if you just cut, it's the same without worrying about consequences. Education becomes an expense, and it's actually an investment. It's an investment in our short-term future for our kids who should have skills that make them employable, but long-term having an educated workforce. So level funding in the short term is, without anything else, is just as irresponsible as runaway spending. So I'm wondering what your plan is. Thank you.
Well, again, I think we agree. This is an investment. I actually think that if we can build this 21st century education system that attracts more people to Vermont, we'll benefit from that as well. More of a continuum from cradle to career, from early childhood care and learning through K through 12, and then into trades training and 2-year associates, 4-year bachelor's, and beyond. Trying to look at this as one system. But here's what we know. I mean, what we need to do is whether it's with our budget, whether it's property taxes, whatever it is, we're already one of the most expensive states to live in the country. We have a lot of attributes. We have a lot of things going for us. But people make decisions based on some of that data and the realities. So we have to get together and figure out what we can do to provide an education system. Maybe it's more interactive learning. Maybe it's more combining school systems. Maybe it's doing something totally out of the box. And what that is, I'm not sure. But what I do know is we can't continue to do what we're doing today. And I think that you'll, across the spectrum, whether Republican or Democrat, would probably agree that what we're doing today isn't working. We're one of the highest in the nation in terms of a cost per pupil. And that's growing at an alarming rate when you're spending, depending on how you measure it, $15,000, $16,000, $17,000 per student per year. And you're not getting the outcomes that the students deserve, the kids deserve. Then we have a problem. And I think that, again, what we need to do is look at this more broadly, think outside the box. Maybe there's more interactive learning, sharing of resources. Maybe there's mandates that we put into place on a state level that's caused some of this. And I'm not saying that we have, but if we've mandated one librarian per school, or one nurse per school, or one of something per school, then we have to take a look at that and determine, can we do this? Can we share resources? Can we do this in a different way while taking care of our students? So I'm just saying, having this summit in December, I believe will bring us a lot of discussion, debate on what we can do together, regardless of our partisan stripes, to face the problem that's really a challenge for us.
We've had a couple of people write in and say to us that they're concerned that the idea of controlling education costs is going to result in the closing of their small school, something they really do not want to see happen. Is that inevitable?
Well, again, we're educating 25,000 fewer students than we were 20 years ago. 25,000 students. We're educating less than 80,000 students per year right now. and we're spending $1.6 billion, the single largest expenditure in our budget. That's over our general budget. So $1.6 billion out of a total all-in with federal funding of $6 billion. I mean, that's significant. That's over, between 25 and 30% of our total budget is in education spending. And I believe there's got to be a better way. We can't continue. We're going to price everyone out of Vermont, and that's going to be detrimental for our citizens. So we have to do whatever we can to be more efficient, more effective, and provide, a high-quality 21st century education system that becomes more of an attraction than it is a burden in terms of costs.
See if we can get a quick call in from Tom in West Bolton. Hi, Tom. Welcome to the program.
Hi there, Governor. Thank you. Thanks for taking the call. First, I want to just say that Resource has really enjoyed the collaboration we've had with the state. Our staff work very closely with a number of state agencies, especially the Department of Labor, to provide workforce training to disadvantaged individuals. And this results in certifications and placement with employers who really need skilled workers.
Tom, unfortunately, we're almost out of time. So if you've got a question, this is the time to ask it.
I was going right there. My question concerns the state budget and whether past funding levels are adequate and whether you, Governor, will consider working with the legislature to increase funding for workforce training programs, especially those that support low-income and disadvantaged groups. And my belief is that there's a lot of evidence that shows that this improves the economy and helps employers. And so I think it would actually pay for itself. So I'll let the governor answer. Thank you.
Okay. We got about 30 seconds.
Yeah. Investing in workforce development is certainly a priority for us. When you think about the 631 that I talk about all the time, six fewer workers every single day when we wake up, fewer workers in our workforce, three fewer students in our education system, and one baby born to addiction every single day, those are our challenges. So workforce development is something that's critical for us as we look to the future.
We'll be tracking many of these issues in the weeks and months ahead. Governor Phil Scott, many thanks for being on the program today.
Well, thank you very much, Bob, for having me on.